Welcome to episode 27 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. In Pennsylvania, this is Eric Barseski, and joining me, as always, from Washington, with a much clearer and crisper sound, is Jeff Smith.
How's it going?
How are you?
I'm doing well. Figuring out that technology stuff.
Technology, yes. This week's podcast should sound a little bit better for you folks. This week, the U.S. Open is, of course, going on, but it's only Friday when we're recording this, so we'll talk a little bit about that, but most of our wrap-up will occur next week. But we did have one more major last week that we can talk about. The McDonald's LPGA tournament, whatever it is. I don't quite enjoy having majors named after fast food restaurants, but there we have it. Sari Park. I mean, are we in 1997 again, or what's going on here?
She's back.
She's back. And a playoff with Kari Webb.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was rooting for Kari Webb, obviously.
I was,
because
too.
it would have been two in a row. But back to the McDonald's thing. Was Ronald McDonald standing behind her during the awards ceremony not the most annoying thing you've ever seen?
I had my fill of Ronald McDonald the first time I saw him on the screen. It wasn't even on network television because they wanted to cut away, so it was on ESPN. You couldn't even find it on, or the Golf Channel covered it, sorry.
Right.
An LPGA major on the Golf Channel. Whatever.
Well, we're going to see a lot more of that coming up here soon.
And they did a respectable job, but it still wasn't quite up to the level. They have a lot of work left to do before they cover PGA Tour events next year, but they did a respectable job. I didn't find myself as annoyed by them as some other announcers we'll talk about later. But Sari Park in a playoff almost holds an eagle shot on the 18th. They send that playoff and they go to the 18th and she hits a tailor-made rescue club to 210 yards or something like that, to 3 inches.
It was
playoff over.
Extremely impressive. And I mean, obviously, Kari Webb was going to have to pull out another miracle. We were going to have to see back-to-back miracles there.
People are falling apart.
Yeah, and it didn't happen. I was going to say, you know, obviously one of the stories behind the story was that Sari Park had, you know, considered quitting the game. And so, you know, to see her win, that was kind of satisfying, I think, for her and then also me as a viewer.
Webb and Sari Park kind of got in because everyone else kind of fell apart in this tournament. There were 20 people, 20 gals that had a chance to win this tournament outright. People were as low as 11 under, and then 8 under gets you in the playoff, if I remember correctly. So what happened? I mean, one of them being Michelle Wee.
Well, I was really disappointed with the putting. I mean, you saw a lot of crucial putts, you know, on the 10, 12 foot and under range that just got lipped out and missed. Webb missed a four foot putt and a 10 foot putt on the last two holes. And with that, she, of course, would have sealed the win.
Yeah. Sari Park 3 putted the last hole to get into the playoff. She would have won it outright with a 2 putt. Blew the first one well by. Michelle Wee came to the last two holes needing a birdie, did not get one on 17, and blew her. She kind of had to go for it on 18, so she ran it past significantly and also three-putted. Then Michelle Wee closes with a comment that says, "I feel like I'm getting closer and closer. It shows a lot that I played my B game, and I'm still in top five." And this rankled a lot of people. This really just pissed off a lot of people that Michelle Wee would dare to say, "I had my B game, and I'm still in the top five." Coming from it's a comment that Tiger's made famous before, talking about having his B game or C game or his A game or whatever. But this is coming from a girl that hasn't won anything yet.
So. Yeah, well, I kind of cringed a little bit simply because it was obviously associated with Tiger Woods, and, you know, she's Michelle Wee. So. Yeah.
She had, from what I could tell, her A-minus game. She did miss a green with a wedge in her hand, which was unforgivable. But she had, like, her C-minus game, again, putting with the flat stick.
She did a great job. I mean, she was playing great from tee to green, but then, boy, man, that it was painful watching her putt those greens.
We talked about it last week when she failed to qualify for the U.S. Open. Her putting's bad. Her dad has told her caddies not to help her. Puzzles the crap out of me, but Michelle Wee's putting, really, again, the common flaw in her game, or the biggest flaw in her game, holding her back right now. So
yeah, and if she does turn that around and starts making a significant amount of putts, you know, she's going to win some events. She's going to make some cuts and reach her quote-unquote goal.
That's about all I have to say on that. So, yeah, some U.S. Open chatter here that we have. It is Friday of the U.S. Open. Play is concluded for the day. Steve Stricker, the only player currently under par, one under par.
Obviously, this is a really, really tough venue. I'm enjoying the difficulty of the venue. It's not particularly long, but it's a tough venue. Monty is obviously playing very well. I'm enjoying
Mrs.
that.
Mrs. Doubtfire is playing well.
Yeah, well, and New York fans have embraced him. They're cheering him on. He made the comment after the round got over with that he thought that most of the fans were kind of sauced up, you know, a little liquor and a lot of sun, and
that's
they don't
right.
go too well together. But, you know, that was kind of, it's been a fun event to watch, and it's, you know, a shock to, a, well, not a shock, but a lot of people, predictions, and, well, Tiger's out.
Tiger's out.
Boy, a lot of people falling by the wayside.
He said before the tournament, I wouldn't play if I didn't think I was ready to play. And then he says after he misses the cut, I guess I wasn't ready to play.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if whether he's making an excuse or whether he learned something about himself, but he really didn't have any part of his game going at all in the past 2 days. A pair of 76s. Phil Mickelson at +3. Didn't have a great round today. Leaderboard right now, Steve Stricker, Colin Montgomery, Jeff Ogilvy playing well at 1 over. Kenneth Ferry, who had it to -4 at one point, is +1. And then we have Jim Furyk, Patrick Harrington at +2. Graham McDowell, Phil Mickelson, Aaron Oberholzer, and Jason Duffner. Not a great name for a golfer, but +3, Jason Duffner. And then in a bit, the big story I thought today was a bit of a Sayre Pot kind of thing. David Duval shoots the low round of the day with Aaron Oberholzer at 68 to get him to +5, I believe, which is in 14th place, tied for 14th.
Impressive.
A 68 out of Duval, and he bogeyed the last two holes to give away a 66 or a 67. So, wow.
Yeah, well, that's a warm fuzzy. A lot of us love seeing David Duval play well. It's awesome to see him striking the ball like he is. And, man, go for it, man.
At this point, since Tiger's out and all my predictions have been shot to heck, who is going to walk away with the trophy here?
I would love to see Monty win this one.
Well, it would lock him for the Hall of Fame, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I've said that he hasn't won a major, so I wouldn't put him in there. But if he wins one, combined with the 8 orders of merit, he's in.
He's in. Well, I mean, he's played so great for so long, and I think he's he's pleasantly surprised to see that he's playing well. And so he's my favorite. My pick, I'll pick Monty.
Well, I'm going with the dark horse. I'm going to pick Aaron Oberholzer at this point. I think he has he won at Pebble Beach. The greens here are very similar. A lot of players are complaining about the greens. They're bumpy, they're slow. I've never seen so many putts at the U.S. Open stop short of the hole.
I know.
I mean, and the people are making, they're hitting the putts hard, and they're just, they're dying. I think the greens at my course are faster. I don't have the slopes that they have at this course, but
yeah.
I've never seen so many putts at the U.S. Open stop short.
Well, these greens are a little bit like a knuckleball. I mean, Tiger the first day, he got out of the gate and left a couple of putts just woefully short. And so he had to kind of readjust. I don't know. A lot of people are doing that. You see many, many putts being, left about a foot, 3-5 feet short, which is crazy.
Aaron Oberholzer, though, to back up again, my pick one at Pebble Beach this year with similar greens. So I'm picking him. Phil's right in it. So could be exciting. Someone with the first 3 legs of a modern day slam. We shall see. And we'll certainly talk about it next week. For right now, here's an ad from Titleist and Chip Shots from Golf Gods. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
In the heat of competition, you should really stick to your go-to shot. For me, that's a tight little draw.
Copy your practice swing and don't think about results.
Just take your time, keep everything nice and slow.
When I'm under pressure, I think about my kids.
I think of my kid too.
Keep it simple, play one shot at a time.
Don't be tentative, stay real aggressive.
Make sure and drink lots of water.
Concentrate on concentrating.
Don't think too much.
Just remember to breathe.
And don't panic.
And one more tip,
trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
From the studios of GolfGods.com in Minneapolis, this is Chip Shots, a weekly look at golf equipment news brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com, the official online pro shop of TheSandTrap.com.
This week on Chip Shots, the Cat in the Hat came back.
Whether it's because you are follically challenged, like myself, or because they are an easy and relatively cheap way to express yourself, or perhaps you are looking to cultivate that certain golf look, hats are as much a part of the game as the clubs, balls, and bags. Lately, I've noticed that the golf fashion designers for the brand-specific clothing have really upped the ante when it comes to the style quotient. Whether it's innovative use of color, materials, or a retro bent with a modern twist, this season's caps are totally cool. As much fashion as function, here are a few of the latest caps that caught my eye. The Odyssey Striped Cap. This red 6-panel semi-structured cap features a cool gray and black stripe detail running from the brim across the center of the cap. The gray ventilation grommets and the rubber Odyssey logo give the normally retro cap a sort of postmodern look. Show your playing partners how you roll by pairing this cap with your too-hot-to-handle short game. If you do like to go bold, the Callaway Orange, by the way, orange is the new black, FT3 HX Tour Authentic Meshback Cap is bold, brash, and totally cool. Yes, pun intended. This isn't your father's mesh, though. This low-profile style cap has a chino cotton meshback to make you look and feel cool. There's a Callaway Golf logo on the front bill, FT3 logo on the left side, and HX Tour logo on the right side. It also features a pre-curved visor with contrasting visor inset with the distinctive Callaway Chevron logo. Last but not least, it's worth mentioning the marketing superpower of the golf world, TaylorMade. Starting last year, TaylorMade started marketing limited edition products around golf's major tournaments. With the U.S. Open underway, you can now buy a limited edition 06 hat and shirt combo. Specifically designed for this year's U.S. Open at Winged Foot, the combo set includes a Majors commemorative white t-shirt and your choice of a navy or white hat. Both the hat and shirt feature the TaylorMade 06 U.S. Open logo. And, as the standard disclaimer says, supplies are limited. You can check out the show notes on thesandtrap.com for links to these and other fine products at golfgods.com. Now back to Eric and this week's podcast.
And welcome back. This week in our forum topic of the week, Chris Berman, not the most adored golf announcer of all time. Jeff, here's
no. Well, I mean, I immediately thought, I'm listening to Chris Berman. I thought, oh, hey, it's Berman, you know, making calls. One of the words that he kept using was wow. You know, so.
And, somebody, oh!
Yeah, well, I mean, so, you know, somebody.
Anytime anyone would hold a putt over 10 feet, he'd go, oh!
Well, not only that, but, you know, someone hits a little pitch or a chip up to the green and he says, wow, and it's left 15, 20 feet short. And I think, well, you know, save your wow for a lip out or something. Well, you know, I heard that probably 5 times.
He's got dumb nicknames for everyone at work, maybe in other sports a little more. Football,
well, I was trying to figure out who Jake was. He kept mentioning Jacob, and then all of a sudden I realized he's talking about Peter Jacobson.
Yeah, and a lot of people call him Jake, but you have to throw in his real name every now and then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he's got trucker. You know, dumb nicknames all over the place, you know, all kinds of stuff. Half of them are, but.
Yeah, what is obvious is, I mean, he's out of his element. He's great with baseball and football and whatever it is. But, you know, the U.S. Open is something different. He needs to kind of step out of the way, be a facilitator, and let some of the guys with some actual golf expertise make some calls.
Yeah, Rafi on our forum says he's way more annoying than tight underwear in a disco club. Can't say I've ever experienced that, but Rafi no doubt has. So.
But we know that Rafi probably has. So.
Yes. Chris Berman, Carl Ravich also not really high on my list of announcers at this U.S. Open. I'm glad that it's Friday and that we're done with the ESPN coverage. We're back to, you know, NBC on the weekend, so I never thought I'd say this, but welcome Johnny Miller.
Right. Well, I mean, I enjoy ESPN for some of the in-depth things that happens, the excellence in the overall, you know, look of it. But yeah, some serious lacking there.
Well, we'll be right back with our Beating Balls segment after this message from Titleist.
When you get in a fairway bunker, choke up on the club a little bit, and I like to aim for the top of the ball.
On long bunker shots, flatten your swing.
You want to feel down in the sand, and then use your instincts.
When you get a plug lie, all you want to do is take a steeper swing and explode down on the ball.
If you want to hit a punch shot, play the ball back in your stance.
When you're in the rough, you're going to want to hit a cut.
One more tip. Trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And welcome back. We're also welcoming in Everardo from Arizona. Hello.
Hey, guys.
Everardo, do you have anything to comment on Sayre Pak, Michelle Wee, U.S. Open stuff, Chris Berman, Carl Ravich, anything?
Yeah, you know, Chris Berman, I hear a lot of people talk about him, and yeah, I don't think he really belongs. He hasn't done enough golf. That's his thing. As far as the U.S. Open is concerned, I like seeing the pros struggle, but 11 over on one day, I don't know if I like to see that. I'll keep it short.
Your prediction at this point to win the U.S. Open?
I had Phil Mickelson down, and I had his winning score at 5 under, which I still think is doable, because you had a couple guys that were 4 under, so, you know, you can get birdies on the course. You just have to work.
Phil Mickelson, -5. I think a lot of people take that action at this point. We're going to move into our Beating Ball segment now. Annika Sorenstam in the McDonald's major broke the
Big
rules.
Mac major.
The Big Mac major broke the rules. In kind of a dumb way, she tore a divot she removed part of a divot, and then she removed another part of a divot, and Kari Webb had to call it on her. 2-shot penalty, she wound up shooting a 75, 6 shots back. She finished, you know, not that far out of the lead, not more than 2 shots, but not too far out. So, what is up, Annika Sorenstam and the rules? This is not her first rules infraction, and she's been to rules seminars.
The thing is, she's a smart person when it comes to rules, too. She uses the rules more to her advantage than she does her fellow competitors. She's very knowledgeable with them. So for her to break a rule and not call on herself, I think it's just mental error.
Well, she seems really distracted this year. She doesn't, you know, obviously she's not playing up to the level that I expected to see again out of her. But she obviously, it just seems distracted, like she's not really with it.
Well, this follows last year towards the end of the year when Paul Kramer swore up and down that Annika Sorenstam's ball did not cross a hazard line. I don't know. More impressive, one quick note to add here, because it's at the end of this article we'll link to in our show notes. Morgan Pressel, I think, she needs to pull her head out of her butt and stop caring what Michelle Wee's up to in in a given week because every time Michelle Wee's in the field, Morgan Pressel tanks. Morgan Pressel having a decent year when Michelle Wee's not in the field.
I wonder how much of it the media actually puts on her as far as, you know, their little rivalry or...
Well, that's not... I think she takes that too far. She needs to play her own game and not worry about beating
Michelle.
Well,
she obviously takes it personally. I know that she got into a little bit of a barking match with Wee earlier in the season. Yeah, she just got to get out there and play her own game. Ignore it. I mean, hey, golf's an individual game. She's got to go play her game and allow that to speak for itself.
All right. Yeah. Moving on to our next story. Tiger Woods was staying in his $20 million yacht privacy in a private marina near New York for the U.S. Open. He may be sailing back to Florida at this point by now, but not a bad way to stay at the U.S. Open, right? Sitting out on the gently rocking waves of marina in a $20 million vessel.
Those are nice accommodations.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a life that I know nothing about.
Come on, Jeff. You got a rowboat in your backyard.
You live in Seattle. You got water all over the place.
Yeah, there's water everywhere. None of it has to do with a yacht for me, though.
I've seen you dress like the Gordon's fisherman.
I don't want to know. Another Tiger Woods story here. Not that we're trying to pile it on, but Tiger Woods, apparently it's tough to get him to say anything. This is kind of a silly article, but one we're going to link to. But basically says, Tiger Woods may be a famous guy, but it's tough to get him to say anything of any importance. Johnny Miller here says, every time I've asked him a question, I can honestly say he's never given me a real answer. Never once. And I've been pretty nice to him. I feel like he's never given me the respect I deserve.
While I may not agree with Johnny Miller's approach here, I think what he's saying is pretty darn close to the truth. Because, I mean, Tiger's been raised with media hounding him since he was a kid. You know, if he wasn't on TV hitting balls for Johnny Carson, he was, you know, in front of a bunch of people. And just a high expectation for this guy. So he's always been under scrutiny. And he has just lived tight-lipped for a long time. I don't think he knows any other way to do it.
He's learned to say what he has to say to get out of the press room without offending or doing anything to tick anyone off.
Yeah, he's always got a real PC response to it. And even his response about Stephen Ames and the whole just thrashing of him was even, borderline PC.
9-8.
Yeah.
9-8.
Yeah. Well, he said enough.
We still remember the things he said 10 years ago when he said things like, second sucks. We still remember that. So for him to say anything these days, be blown way out of proportion and whatnot.
Well, and if you listen to like a lot of his friends, like Jordan, when he talks about him when they play together, or Barkley, or, you know, whenever all these guys are together, Tiger trashes Hawks trash a lot.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's just being smart in the media's eyes because they're just going to skew or amplify whatever he says.
And I think Tiger gives honest answers to things. They may not be in depth. They may not criticize other people. They may be politically correct, but I think he answers questions. Today after the U.S. Open, he said, I'm pissed. I played like crap. I didn't execute. I couldn't drive it well. I didn't play my irons well. I couldn't putt. I couldn't get the speed. So, I mean, that's an honest answer without being, you know, what more can you say?
And I thought he was pretty open in his initial press conference after coming to the U.S. Open. I thought his remarks were candid. He was honest about where he was at. I think he was honest. He felt like he really was ready. Obviously, you know, we've seen that he wasn't exactly ready, but...
All right, well, speaking of Johnny Miller, NBC has announced that they've re-signed Johnny Miller to a new contract. Some others, like CBS, were after him, and Johnny said, to be totally honest, the lure of doing the Masters was bouncing around in my head, but he's passed that up, and he's staying with NBC. We'll call up to about 14 events next year, so.
It'll be nice not to hear him at the Masters.
Unfortunately, we still have to listen to Lanny Watkins.
Well, that's true.
I'd rather listen to Hootie Johnson than Lanny Watkins. Oh well, Johnny Miller calling 14 events next year instead of 9, so you will hear him quite a bit more. Yeah. Phil Mickelson, one driver, 4 wedges. He's going with a 64-degree wedge. Does Phil Mickelson get too much credit for being a mad scientist kind of player? The two driver thing has been used before in the past. They used to call it a spoon. 64-degree wedge.
Well, I think people are making a big deal out of it because, you know, not many players are messing around with their equipment as much as Phil is, and so obviously this year he's done a bit more of that. I think it's working to his advantage. Obviously, you know, we can look back to the Masters. Yeah, it worked.
Okay. Does he get too much credit, Everardo?
I think he doesn't, because a player of his stature or someone in the top 5 doesn't, like Jeff said, doesn't screw around with their equipment.
Fair enough. The USGA has renamed, this is just nothing really to comment on, just something we want to link to. The USGA has renamed its book award in honor of Herbert Warren Wind. It will be named the Breaking Wind Award. No, I'm kidding. It will be named the Herbert Warren Wind Book Award. Kudos to him. Herbert Warren Wind, of course, naming Amen Corner at Augusta, among many, many other credits.
So you have a chance at a literary achievement there.
That's right. In other USGA news, Marion, long believed to be, you know, a primary example of a course that could no longer host a modern U.S. Open, will get the U.S. Open in 2013. A lot of people said, oh, there's not enough parking space. A lot of people said, ah, the course is too short. But the USGA decided it withstood the test of the U.S. Amateur last year. So it's been awarded the U.S. Open in 2013. Your thoughts, guys, on this?
Well, they've got 7 years to lengthen it, make parking, and do whatever they need to do. So,
well, I think they say the infrastructure and the course are there. It tested the best amateurs, and a lot of them drive the ball as far as the pros do.
Well, and I mean, consider this. Whenever the USGA gets their teeth into a golf course, you know, they can trick it out. It's going to be a tough course. While, you know, it's going to be shorter, may make it a little easier. The USGA knows how to make things tough.
Maybe interesting to see Tiger Woods hitting 3-iron off half the tees.
Yeah, by then they'll have 10-yard wide fairways.
They'll still be wider than my courses, so.
And the game will be completely ruined.
By the way, I'd like to point out
I
would like to point out that I beat Tiger Woods the past 2 days. I played Thursday. I played Friday. I beat him both in relation to par and total strokes. Obviously, I didn't play at Winged Foot, but I beat Tiger Woods. I didn't play at putt-putt either. I played at my par 72 home course with a slope of 135.
And well done. I understand it's been a while since you'd broken par.
Thank you very much. 71.
Good job.
Followed by an 80. Job. 151. I beat Tiger by a stroke.
There you go.
Nice.
So I'm more willing today than last week to give Phil credit as the best player currently than Tiger Woods right now, since I just beat him.
Okay.
All right.
That's Eric's dreamland. His happy place.
If I could just have his wife's, you know, identical twin sister, all would be right in the world. The USGA, Oakmont is petitioning the USGA to have furrowed bunkers when they host the U.S. Open next year. This, you know, coming right after, of course, the Memorial. And Oakmont being most famous for having furrowed bunkers, you know, back in the 30s and 40s and whatnot. Should Oakmont be allowed to have furrowed bunkers?
Why the hell not?
Why the I hell liked not? It. Yeah, I liked yeah. it too. It's a unique feature to that course, right?
It's just a cool look, too.
And it did.
And for all the sniveling that happened at Jack's tournament, it wasn't that bad.
Sand save percent went down less than 6%.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Okay. Oakmont, we hope you get it.
Yeah, pass out the hankies and then tell them to enjoy themselves.
For those guys, it's just more of a mental.
Look at Steve Stricker. He held out 2 bunker shots on his back 9 for birdies today. So with furrowed right. bunkers, Colin Montgomery would be leading the U.S. Open right now. Correction from last week. The USGA has issued a correction. Tad Fujikawa, who also missed the cut, is actually the youngest player to qualify for the U.S. Open. It was previously believed that Tyrell Garth was. It was believed he was 14, but turns out Tyrell Garth was 15 years, 11 months, and 27 days old, while Tad Fujikawa of Honolulu was 15 years, 6 months, and 7 days old, a 5-foot guy, the youngest ever to play in the U.S. Open. So congratulations, and nice little correction there by the USGA, and giving the guy proper credit. They tracked down Tyrell Garth and found out he was older than they thought.
So there you go.
That's just a cool story, too.
Tad Fujikawa finishing 140th, beating players like Mark Calcavecchia, Nick Price, Dylan Doherty, John Rollins, Ryan Posey. So applause, golf clap.
Yay.
And our last story this week, Sergio Garcia shot 78-78 on the 15th tee Friday. He asked the USGA official how much he'd be fined for throwing his driver. Asked how far he planned on throwing it, Garcia said, about 100 yards. if I could break in here, that's pretty darn far to throw anything. And the USGA official said, I've got a better idea. Why don't you give me the driver and I'll auction it off a first tee charity. So he did, and he teed up with a 3-wood for the last 3 holes. So, again, good for Sergio, giving up a driver for a good cause, I guess.
How did he finish the last 3? Because I know, didn't Cody give up his driver completely and he's using a 3-wood?
Yeah.
Okay.
He finished bogey, par, bogey.
Okay.
And I suppose you guys noticed that he gave up his TaylorMade putter. I think he was using a Yes model.
It doesn't matter what he putts with.
It was just as pathetic as his last putter.
It's not going to be good. I saw somewhere someone posted a comment saying that they should do a golf cartoon where Sergio, Tiger, and Retief Goosen are all walking off the course, muttering, you know, their heads hanging low, their shoulders slumped. And the USGA official is off to the side saying, we're trying to identify the best golfer.
Jeez.
Yeah, exactly.
So much for that, guys. That does it for episode 27 of the Golf Talk Podcast. This is Eric Barzeski.
Everard Akini.
Jeff Smith, and we'll see you next time.